to the Hagman and Hagman Report. Hagman flying solo tonight. Joe's taking some time, some leave time. Take care of some business, family business. He'll be back with us. But in the meantime, taking care of business myself. Stan Deo every Tuesday is with us. If you haven't visited his website recently, do so. And let me ask you, why not? If you haven't gotten Dare to Prepare, you need to dare to prepare. I dare you to prepare. And also Stan's book as well. And Holly's new book, Prophetic Peril. So let me remind you about that. You know, it seems like we're always talking about books, but it's obviously next to the Bible. You've got the Bible and on your front and center. And then, of course, all of the other books. And it's amazing. I can never get too much information, at least on my end. Don't forget, folks, this is the 53rd anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. I opened the program with reference to that and some things that some information the CIA dropped about that. Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to masterpreps.com. Masterpreps.com. You want an insanely, Masterpreps.com, the sponsor of our show, Masterpreps.com. That's Masterpreps.com. Take a visit there. Hard to find items. High quality items, made in America items. I mean, anything, everything you could possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans to, I mean, it is, it'll blow you away. Absolutely. Eric said, it's insane. I mean, wow, look at the products. So masterpreps.com, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report family. But also, wow, how'd you do it? How'd you get all the... I'd like to see your warehouse. Okay, masterpreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report family. Folks, visit masterpreps.com. Now, Stan Deo from standeo.com with us. Stan, we had 2 hours of... Well, an hour... 45 minutes with Joel Richardson talking about the Islamic Antichrist. I was thinking about you the entire interview, almost your discussions about Turkey. It's like every time I turn around, it's hey, you know what, Stan Deo, his research is looking good.
Well, what did he say in brief? Did he say that Turkey or Erdogan or
His book, The Islamic Antichrist, came out in late 2015, and it really took off in 2016. And the focus, and even the stuff that you talked about too, with the Turkey being the source of the Antichrist, and the Antichrist, where I always believed, because of bloodlines and because of lineage, it would have to be somebody from the West, you know, from that Western royalty kind of thing. Never really buying into, or research wise looking at the Islamic aspect like you have, and through his work said, yeah, look at Turkey, look at Erdogan. If he's not, certainly he's not committing to Erdogan being the Antichrist, however, coming from that area, setting it up, being the, you know, he could very well be. If he's not, he certainly is a good candidate for the Antichrist. But the Islamic Antichrist, like you've talked about in the past, and Turkey being the epicenter for the birth of that, that's kind of what he said. And then he said, hey, well, if you have any questions, ask Stan. No, I'm kidding. But.
You know, we talk about the Antichrist, and we tend to forget there's an Antichrist and a false prophet that comes after the first beast. You know, I think from the fact that the first beast, the Antichrist, really, he's wounded severely and appears to come back from, well, maybe he does, look like he's alive again. And then but he doesn't have the strength, you know, the power that the second beast does, the false prophet, because if you look in Revelation 12, or 13, I guess it is, the false prophet does the numbering and causes all kinds of things that are terrible to happen that we attribute to the Antichrist. And for that reason, I think the Antichrist per se, the first one, should probably be a weaker person than the, you know, politically and otherwise, than the false prophet. And to that end, I still am hovering over the Middle East, saying that we must look at Saudi Arabia, young Prince Salman, and the consortium he's put together, being the first beast, being defeated, being wounded terribly in an attack against Israel in the Psalm 93 war. And then what follows is Erdogan, who, you know, takes over the reins and using, you know, young Prince Salman as, you know, a figurehead, and what he tried to do, goes to organize peace and bring all the warring nations and Israel together. Because to win the Psalm 93 war, is this the right Psalm 93? Yeah, it is, isn't it? The one talking about the war?
Yep.
Yeah, my mind is gone today. Too many things going on. Anyway, the point is that Israel is probably going to destroy the Saudi consortium that attacks it with nuclear weapons that will astound people, all the nations, in fact. And for that reason, all the nations of the world will want a peace treaty, and the one who will ratify that will probably be the false prophet who takes over from the Antichrist, because the Antichrist has been wounded and taken out of power. So anyway, that's just my thought. When you look on my show images page, I'm keeping those up there where I have three pictures of about five possible antichrists, and you can click on that and read various things about them that might fit prophecy. But right next to that square, it's underneath image two, about two lines in the middle, which cities in the Mediterranean region were built on seven hills. Mm-hmm. Now, whether it is an Arab or Middle Eastern antichrist or not, these four cities, I think one of them will be the location of, his strength or his base of operations.
When you say Rome, Italy, and for the listeners, people listening on Global Star and BTR, able to see the show images, I just want to explain, the four cities, Athens, Istanbul, Jerusalem, and Rome. When you say Rome, I just want a clarification, then you can continue. Do you mean the Vatican or just Rome in general?
No, Rome the city, because Rome the city was built on seven hills. Then there's a river to the southwest of it, or to the northwest, I guess, and across that river is where the Vatican's built. So the Vatican's not actually up on the seven hills there. However, a base of operations and temple could be found in Jerusalem, on the old city up on the mountain around it, and that would fulfill the bill in that it's built, the temple is built on the top of seven hills. Istanbul, Turkey, one of the things with Istanbul and Turkey is Istanbul is a big city, and, you know, it's built on seven hills, but there are seven hills with a lot of dirt in between them, so the hills are spread out. It's not up in a tight little package. With Athens, in Greece, they're spread out as well. And so when you boil it all down, Jerusalem seems to be coming out ahead there. So that, because all the hills are so close together, that it's really a raised area that is not so widespread as the others. I mean, the seven hills are inside the old city walls of Jerusalem. And you can click on the various images I've got there on Shoemi's page and see that. Whereas, if you look in Greece, the mounts are, they're fairly well separated, and they're in the middle of a plain, and they rise up, but it's not like a city was built on those seven hills, mm-hmm. if you get my difference. The only one that seems to fit.
Difference. Yeah.
Yeah, the two of them fit it. There's Rome and there's Jerusalem. And Rome, for the Vatican to be considered, it is, well, the Vatican is clear across the Tiber River from it, so that's not it, unless the Antichrist builds on, the old Roman mound, where you have, Palatine Hill and Capitoline Hill and those kind. So I think we've narrowed it down, at least to my mind. I don't know. I'm just looking at Istanbul again. Yeah, Istanbul possibly could, but the problem I have with Istanbul is that six of the hills are on one kind of stretch of raised mountainous area. The seventh hill, there is the Lycus River, which is goes underground at a certain point there, but that separates the six hills from the seventh hill. So in the technical sense of the word, Istanbul doesn't qualify either, so we get back to Rome and Jerusalem. So anyway, just, you can come through that and have a look at that. That's on there.
Very interesting. Great research, by the way. Thank you for all the research you've done on that and keeping tabs like that, folks. Just go to standale.com, show images, and click through that. Stan's keeping tabs. So, what has caught your interest here in the last week or so?
The 13th, was that Friday? Watching these quakes the 13th. From the 13th, what day was that? Last Saturday?
That was Sunday.
Sunday.
Last Sunday. Well, a week ago from last Sunday.
I can't remember. I just know it was the 13th because, you know, I got up and turned on the computer, and it was Sunday. And we heard about that big 7.82 earthquake over in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, that's pretty big, you know. And I looked at the aftershocks, and because I get email notices from the GNS, Geological and Nuclear Center over in, they're North Island, but they're all over the island in New Zealand. And they send me updates on quakes over there as small as, you know, like a Richter 2. Well, I started getting flooded. I mean, like hundreds and hundreds of aftershocks coming in from that one quake over there. And I thought, whoa, what's happening here? That should stop. You know, we shouldn't have this kind of a flutter. So I started watching, and every day I was getting hundreds and hundreds. And it ended up with over 5,000 hits, you know, earthquakes there in New Zealand from that one quake. I was really impressed. So I pulled them down, and I've updated it today. You can click on the show images page there on an image number 4. And I've shown the earthquakes as blue lines. And over the big ones, I've put their Richter scale. And then, of course, the dates are underneath them, date and time. Now, I drew kind of what's called a trend line, an averaging line between all the quakes to see the general pattern of what was happening. Okay, you had the 7.82, then you had a 5.85, then a 6.19 within a few hours, and then a 5.3, a 5.2, 5.3, 5.09, a lot of Richter 5s, and then you wait about a day, and then you had almost Richter 6 again at 5.96. And all right, then you have a few little aftershock 5s, and then you had a 5.56 that was in a grouping of 5.38 and 2.1. Then it quieted down for a bit. Then we had a 6.26 again after a couple of days, and then a bit of a rest. And then we had a 5.36, 5.75, 5.76, 5.76, 5.75 earthquake. And then we wait another day, and things calm down. Then we had a 5.7, a 5.78, and a 5.41 all in a cluster. And then we wait a little over a day. And then we hit a 5.04, and things kind of just settle down until today. Then we had a 5.5 and 5.69. It's going up again. Normally, aftershocks are kind of like, when you hit a drum head with a drumstick, boom, and the after vibrations quiet down until there's no sound from the drum head. This is not happening. It is going boom, 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 boom. And I'm speeding up the time. But as a result, what is, I got into the GNS inside forecasting and analysis from the engineers over there in Auckland. I said, what's going on? And they said, they wrote it out. They said, there appears to be something unusual happening here in that we're having a number of aftershocks from other fault lines that are being triggered by that one over in Hawke's Bay, the big one. And I thought, whoa, this is interesting. So if you go next image, the Taupo Caldera image number 5, I've updated that today as well. And that shows magnitude 2 to 6, and the 7 one as well down the middle of it, that have occurred in the last 9 days in New Zealand. And you'll see down in the middle of the picture there, a cluster of earthquakes around Hawke's Bay there in the kind of northern eastern tip of South Island where that big quake occurred. You'll see a lot of aftershocks there. You think, well, okay, that's a lot of aftershocks. Well, if you go to their site and dig down into that image, you'll see that they form patterns over multiple fault lines. And then if you look up toward the North Island, which is, you know, basically a little bit smaller in area than the South Island, and flatter in places, you know, it's not so mountainous. But the shock aftershocks went right up through North Island to White Island, which is a volcanic island, and it's called the Zipper Island by GNS, by the Geological Nuclear Sciences Group down there, because if it has a massive eruption or a huge earthquake attended by an eruption as well, it will unzip the fault line between White Island at the top end of North Island all the way down through Lake Taupo and possibly right on down to Hawke's Bay. It'll unzip the fault line that's a stress line trying to tear New Zealand in half. If that happens, it will release the Lake Taupo caldera, which will probably be more impressive than a Yellowstone impression, eruption. And since I did have a dream vision, a couple of very clear, lucid dream visions about what's going to happen at Lake Taupo when it erupts, and this fits in with what the local Maori people, the indigenous people of New Zealand, say very soon that Lake Taupo is going to erupt, and it will kill a lot of the Europeans that occupy the island now, and give the island back to control of the Maori. The Maori have warned the Europeans before, probably, 120 years back, I think, just roughly, when there was an eruption north of Lake Taupo, Rotorua, is that right? Anyways, the pink stones up north of there, there was a lake there, and the Europeans were traveling by canoe across the lake, and they passed a ghost canoe full of Maori Indians, it looked like, and they passed by them and looked at each other, and they took it as a warning that something was happening. It was a warning from the ghost ship, the ghost canoe of the Maoris, and the next day, a horrific eruption occurred there and covered the pink steps, etc., with lava and just, you know, wiped out the area. So now that the Maori have had this, and myself and several other people have had dream visions of what's about to happen there, whenever something like this, inexplicable to science even, occurs, you know, my radar antenna go up and say, holy cow, look at this. Now, we'll keep watching this, but there's something else that has occurred, which is along with this, which is even more puzzling. And if you look at image 6, tremors rattle Hawke's Bay, silent earthquake, and that'll take you to the article itself, not just to a photo. Right. And it's been going on since the 7.8 earthquake occurred 9 days ago. This slow motion, quiet, slow slip earthquake shifting the tectonic plates. And, you know, it's so subtle that you're not getting detection on seismographs, but they've been measuring by subsidence in various places along the coast. Let's see if I can find here in the article how they did see that. Anyway, the GNET system run by GNS down there, you know, the earthquake people like USGS, did pick up a few subtle land movements of a few millimeters, and that's how they were able to track that something was sliding. And this is a worry. I'm sure they're not going to be telling a lot of the tourists this, and, you know, some of the locals that are a bit skittish because they don't want to worry them, but anybody living in New Zealand has got to be pretty much clued up on lookout for weird stuff, because one day the island's going to get ripped apart and then volcano to pieces and all kinds of stuff. I hope someone has told the hobbits that live down on the South Island, though.
You know, Stan, it just seems to me that this is not... it was news the day it happened. The day after, it goes, you know, to page 7, and then it's off the wires. I mean, this is big news, right? I mean,
well, of course it is. It's real big news. Look, I go up to picture 8 right above the picture I've got, and you'll see the fault. Whoops, I guess you can't get to it. The thing is, I'll have to change that. There's something wrong with the permissions on it. New Zealand, right. 'Cause it's got the fault lines. And the fault lines, come on, let me have it. I got to talk to my computer because sometimes it gets a bit cranky. And okay. Okay.
That's why we love you.
Well, I, you know, if I talk to myself, I'm in real trouble. But
That's all right.
I can talk to my computer and get away with it. Oh, there it is. I see it. Okay. Yeah, okay. Okay, so it's called a permissions error. Now let's see if it works. Yes. Okay, if you click on image number 8,
right.
And that's in the article on the slow slip, but I wanted to bring it up to show you underneath all those earthquakes into the kind of northwest of the earthquakes, all the fault lines they've got in that little tip there, and they're close together. This is like Los Angeles, San Diego, San Francisco, all that area where the New Madrid, not the New Madrid, what am I saying, where the San Andreas fault line is. It has all kinds of parallel faults that are trying, one of them trying to join up to the Mexican fault line down there. And, you know, near the Salton Sea. In fact, I think they are technically joined at this point. So all these parallel minor fractures like that that seem to just be separate are converging now. Then they're converting the seismic energy as they converge and slip to the upper right-hand corner of the image there where the blue lines are showing up moving, and some are going out to sea, you know, the Hawke's Bay way. This is telling you that it's trying to split the island right there. And this is not news. We, you know, I've seen this in a number of the you know, proper papers written by scientists down there about what's happening to New Zealand. And I've talked about it in your show for, you know, in the past years about it and let it go because nothing was happening. But if you look at image to the right of that, image 9, which again is in that article, you'll see the movement in the direction and the millimeters. And basically you'll see that there's, you'll see that split with North Island all the fault lines, that the red lines are moving 1 meter and the blue lines are a tenth of a meter in the slip movement. But, you know, this is weird because it's showing strong movements, long blue lines heading up through Auckland to the upper right of the picture. And that is not as, that's moving stronger and faster than those along the east coast of that island, which means it's trying to twist the island in half, which you can see that the little blue arrows are heading right for Lake Taupo, the little white lake in the middle of that. And I'm telling you, it's going to split the North Island right along there. And the first thing I saw in my dream vision was this. The water got hot and raised up, you know, and then fell away as it drained down into the caldera underneath and hit all that hot magma, and next came the big explosion. And this is something they're scared to death over there in the GNS area, group. They don't want the water in Lake Taupo to drain off or evaporate away because it takes the lid off. It's holding down the caldera at the moment, which is hot. But even worse than that is if there's a fracture in the dome and the water drains into it suddenly, it'll be a steam explosion, a phreatic-type explosion. You know, I just, I guess there are people down in New Zealand listening to your show. I hope so anyway. But it's time to get your thinking cap on.
All right. Well, in the same topic of earthquakes, I couldn't help but notice that we had an earthquake, of course, in Fukushima, Japan. You know, 6.9, and then compare that to the earthquake or the what happened in April of 2011 with Fukushima. Is this related? I mean, I know they're all kind of related, but is this something else that we need to concern ourselves with even more, given the...
Well, yeah, yes, but probably for a different reason and perhaps a different amount of concern or you know, the amount of threat here. I'm just pulling up the earthquake pattern for the Pacific at the moment as we speak here.
I didn't want to take you, I apologize though, I took you off of New Zealand because I certainly don't want to minimize that, and that's horrific down there, and the potential, and of course in line and you know with your dream vision, but I'm looking at everything else. My goodness, it just seems like we're shaking, rattling and rolling everywhere.
Well, we are, and you know, going up to what we're talking about toward the earthquake up in Japan, that is officially an aftershock of the Richter 9 a few years back that hit the Fukushima coastline. And this is down not quite in the same location, but south of there. But the earthquakes, and five sixes and stuff, moved up from New Zealand, up that ridge there, toward Raoul Island, and over toward the south of the Fiji Islands, and these are all Richter 5s or 5s, moving up toward the fault line that then continues, or the ridge that then continues around the left and up into New Guinea and into Indonesia and and up into Japan. All that's on the same ridge of the southwest part of the Arc of Fire, the Ring of Fire in the Pacific, they call it. And for that reason, it indicates to me that the whole darn thing is, the Ring of Fire is becoming active. And should we worry? Well, here in the United States, it's been very quiet over in the northwest along the Juan de Fuca Plate, when I say very reasonably so. And if that starts to become busy, then I think we need to, get ready for a problem here as well. We've got the whole West Coast to worry about, and you've been seeing in the press, I'm sure, that the geologists over in the West have been saying, well, look, the big one is a lot closer than we thought because of all these new little interconnected fault lines. And
Stan, hang on a second here. We're up against the break. Stan Deo, standeo.com. Folks, stay where you're at. Coming right back. Reaching all the far corners of the earth. I want to say hello to Sam listening live in Auckland, New Zealand. Auckland, New Zealand, who's got a question for Stan. Where, it, by the way, it is 3:30 p.m. Wednesday. It's tomorrow today in New Zealand. That's right. So, Sam, here's what I want you to do. You got to tell me what tonight's lottery numbers are, okay, on the East Coast. And let me know. We can game the system. I know we can. You and me, bud, together. All right.
I can hear calling random events in your voice.
Yeah. Stan, the question I'm going to pose to you. This from Sam listening live again. Where it's 3:30 in the afternoon on Wednesday. Isn't that funny how that works? Here's this question to you, and it's kind of what you indicated. Not kind of. It is. Stan writes, we're in Auckland, New Zealand, and felt the initial 7.9 quake last Sunday. Listening to Stan and starting to ponder. Should we pack up and leave? Now, Stan, hold that thought, hold that answer, because I want to just mention this. I've got to mention this. Greenovative, folks, you saw me with the battery charger, the greatest little device in the world to charge batteries using salt water and magnesium pucks. I mean, greenovative.com, I don't know how they do it. I probably should go back to high school science, but nonetheless, Alan Riggs from Greenovative has developed the greatest little battery charger I've ever seen. I mean, this thing is so cool. It charges rechargeable batteries. And you know, we're talking about the earthquakes, no power. What if you've got no light? You don't want a little, or no hamster to run that little wheel, okay? Hand cranking, no sun. You don't need any of that. When planning for a disaster, must have is a good supply of batteries. Throwaway batteries, they go dead after a while. You know, shelf use and so on. Look, rechargeable batteries are the way to go. Solar chargers, you need a charger. Solar chargers can help, but only during the daylight hours. Hand crank chargers, you know, well, that's just whatever. The ideal solution is from Greenovative. It's the G-Mag Power Cell. It weighs 8 ounces, makes power simply by adding salt water to the unit. G-Mag is EMP safe. It's got an indefinite shelf life and can charge an unlimited number of batteries. And it's made in the USA. All right. So greenovative.com. And here's the best part of all. Between now and Christmas, listeners to the Hagman and Hagman Report, 15% off all purchases through Christmas using the promo code Hagman. Greenovative.com. 15%. Off all purchases through Christmas using promo code Hagman. Take advantage of that, and hey, have at it. Christmas stocking stuffers, Christmas presents, Christmas, whatever, birthdays, anniversaries. I'm going to get my wife into this for our anniversary. What do you think, folks? No, she'll like it. But Stan, Sam from Auckland, New Zealand.
Okay.
Thoughts?
Let's repeat the question again. Should he pack and get out of town? Well, Sam, yeah. Look, the last time when I first had that dream vision, I was in Australia. I'd just been to New Zealand, and I came over to New Zealand, and I was doing a live show that afternoon there with Art Bell, nighttime here, and I mentioned the dream vision I'd had there, and, you know, because the sand was hot and steaming around the lake shore of Lake Taupo, where I was staying there at the motel, you know, I expressed that, you know, I felt an urgency about not staying there myself that day. Well, the New Zealand Tourism Department, Sam, heard this, and they contacted me and asked me never to come back to New Zealand because it hurt tourism. So, you know, I'm a bit hesitant at this point to say, Sam, get out of town. But I am saying it's probably not going to be a good idea. If you'll look at the plot on the GNS website there, you can get it down there where you are, as well as what I've got on my website today. But look on it, see the pattern of earthquakes. That tells you probably where the stresses are going to occur. Get out of the, you know, if you don't, I don't know where you live, but in Auckland, but I would say that you'll probably want to get up to the north of the island, up at Little Tongue, and, or at least be ready to get to that point, or on foot to that point, or on bicycle or something, should the roads be closed, because there will be ash, I'm sure, everywhere. The damage is going to be extensive when Taupo goes, and I suggest, since I don't know exactly when, that, you know, you might make, you know, an emergency getaway, a go bag, and you and your family know where to go and how to contact each other if you're apart when it happens, and you know, first aid and water, or a way to drink you know, salt water or something to make it pure. This would probably be a good idea. There are going to be sections of North Island and South Island that survive, but it's going to be broken up just like the coast of California will be. So I'm not telling you to just disappear and run for the hills. I'm just telling you, keep an eye on this kind of stuff. If the earthquakes in the islands there, in North and South Island, both from this Victor 7.9, if they continue to have these periodic bumps of fives and sixes, and it starts to go up five, six and a half, seven again, then I would be very aware of things day and night. Hope that answers the question.
There you have it, Sam. You know, Stan, it's difficult, because if I was in Sam's position, I'd be asking the same question, and I'd be really wanting answers. And I don't know. I mean, I'd be on my knees in prayer for guidance, because that's a difficult. I mean, that's very. I mean, I'm thinking about my home. If I had to leave my home, my studio, my offices, because of this threat, I mean, that would really be a mind-bending journey, and a mental journey, I guess. But so, prayer, Sam. I mean, certainly put it to prayer. But Stan, yeah, I mean, it's the reality of it. Is look what happened, and you know.
Yeah. Well, Sam, look, you know. Doug is right. Definitely pray. Do all you can to prepare yourself to weather such an event, but don't panic. I know there was a sign on the walls at Strategic Air Command when I was there. It says, if you can keep your calm when everybody else around you is, you know, in chaos, you just don't understand the problem. and this is where we are at the moment, I guess, but I think I do understand the problem. Long term, you know, I've advised some of my friends that want to move to New Zealand to get out of America because of its problems, political and otherwise. Don't do it. It'd be like telling them to move to Yellowstone. So if you're planning a move, I would certainly move to the north of North Island and up that little, to the high ground up in that little lake up there to the left. I don't know what that's called, but up above White Island on the left. Anyway, you know, you are where you are, and the good Lord put you there for a reason. So if you're a believer, be sharing that with folks around who might need it that aren't there yet and won't make it out. you know where you're going, but where they're going is still uncertain. So if they're not believers.
Which you said, Stan, to me, yeah, it's so important to me. God puts you there for a reason. I believe you're alive at this point in time for a very specific purpose. You're where you're at for a very specific purpose, and it's up to us to pray and discern that the instructions. I mean, we have to play our position and keep in mind that we're here for a reason. We're where we're at for a reason as well.
Yeah.
So thanks, Stan, for that. And Sam, thank you for listening. All right, go ahead.
You know, it reminds me of a funny thing that happened when Ollie and I were down there in Taupo. We checked into the motel and checking out everything in my dream vision I had, found Manuel's motel right there on the edge of Lake Taupo, and I knew the inside of it like the back of my hand because of the dream vision. And we had proven all this, gone in there, seen the hot safe, seen the bar where the water's going to rise up to underneath the bar, and people will be sitting on the tables when it happens. And, you know, and we walked in the sand behind Manuel's that night, and it was steam between our shoes, you know, as we were walking along. We thought, this place might be going tonight. Look, there's no time to wake up the people at the motel because they've already gone to bed. We'll leave payment on the table in our room and the key, you know, and say sayonara, you know, we had to leave town. And so we packed up and raced back up to Auckland and waited a day or so and didn't happen. I thought, well, heck, okay, I'm being a chicken nervous Nelly, and went back down to the hotel or the motel down there, and they said, oh, are we glad to see you. When you guys disappeared and left the money there, we knew what you were here for, checking on earthquakes or a volcano. We thought the island was going to go, and everybody was in a panic. I guess we weren't too quiet about our exit somehow or another, but anyway.
You're not going to be a candidate for a position at the Chamber of Commerce at all anytime soon.
No. Department of Tourism definitely isn't going to either.
Yeah.
But, it was exciting. I mean, when we were down there, I got up, Hollywood knew about it. I got up in a single engine aircraft, and the pilot and I flew over a Ruapehu volcano, which is at the south end of Lake Taupo on the edge of the caldera. And I remember flying through the fumes coming up in the greenish bubbling sea at the top was a sea of sulfuric acid, and you don't just fly over in a hurry, so you're out there hanging over a boiling cauldron of sulfuric acid, and it was neat. It was exciting. It got the adrenaline flowing, and I was glad we got back down and had a nice margarita at the motel later that night. But anyway,
well, I'd be sucking them down.
I had two-handed it.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Now back to Fukushima. The Fukushima Richter 9 that occurred was about 50 miles offshore, kind of just slightly north. It was in a bay area in the south part of Sendai, where the bay is. And so it made a tsunami that came inland into the nuclear power plants. Well, the little cluster, little flurry, swarm of earthquakes after that 6.9 in the last day or so over in Japan was about 60 miles south of where the Fukushima 9 hit, and about 50 miles from the Fukushima coastline where the nuclear reactors are. But because of the shape of the seabed underneath the coast there, the tsunami that would have been produced by this would have gone more towards Sendai, up in the bay there, and around Ishinomakai. So that area there would have taken the brunt of the tsunami, and that's probably why it wasn't quite so damaging to any of the nuclear facilities that still are being watched over there. I'm just pulling the map up to look quickly at California, because there is a lot of small earthquake activity in California and in Alaska.
That's a man-made earthquake by the pro-Hillary supporters still stomping around out there.
If you've gone over to our website, to the standeo.com, Holly has a little note she put in there for today's news, which kind of really kind of says it about all those people, the strange ones over in California. You got to read it. I won't take time here. You can go.
Yeah,
I saw that, folks.
Standeo.com. Standeo.com. Read the note.
Well said. Yes. But anyway, that's the earthquakes, you know, for real. I still keep watching all this alleged fracking stuff. here. And I'm still thinking that we're seeing an edge of the craton, you know, the sub, the shoe that our comet sits on that goes down to the lower levels of the core, or the mantle, sorry. That craton edge goes right on up and stops at the Rocky Mountains, but I think I see signs of it going over and crossing over near Utah there, northern Colorado and Utah, to join up with that. And at that point in time, I would start to be a lot more worried about the California quakes if I were living there. But being that most of those people are flakes over there, they're probably not going to be too concerned about it, just drinking their lattes and going la la la. But anyway, watch that area there between Oklahoma City and Utah, Salt Lake City, and watch the area of the Juan de Fuca plate. It's kind of like a vacuum cleaner. It looks like an old-timey vacuum cleaner with a bag out to left and the suction part down to the bottom near the top of California. Watch for quakes down in the lower foot part of it, the vacuum cleaner that would suck up the carpet, the area. That has undersea volcanoes that are active. It has some geology down there that's quite busy looking as far as sub-oceanic peaks. And that could be where we see some activity that puts tsunami along the Oregon coast and up to part of Washington, and certainly down toward California. Anyway, keep an eye on that. That's enough on earthquakes.
All right.
You saw where Trump has come out and said, oh, look, it's not my intention to prosecute her. Hillary, she's had enough problems and that kind of stuff, right?
And I've got some personal thoughts on that, but go ahead, sir. Yep.
Well, Ann Coulter had some thoughts on it, too, and she says, now just think about it. She says, wait a minute. If Obama's going to pardon her because she's going to get prosecuted by Trump, she'll get off scot-free. But if Trump says, oh, I'm not going to prosecute her, then he won't pardon her. Obama won't pardon her. She's cool, and he won't get into trouble. And then when Obama's gone, you know, the Trump administration will jump on her both feet. So that makes more sense to me.
It does me, too. And of course, the way he said that, made that statement, of course, he's not going to do any prosecuting. It would be up to the Justice Department, of course, as well as, or a special prosecutor. But yes, I agree with you on that. Why telegraph, or why send a message that you're going to go after her and so Obama could pardon her? I agree with that. And I hope that's the case, Stan.
Yeah, I know. It's just bad. I know we're being naughty, but anyway.
Have you been, Stan, on that same line, have you been following the real perversity with respect to the release of the emails and the, some call it Pizzagate, some call it, well, it's child sex slavery. And have you been following that at all, with respect to the, like, Comet ping pong? This is, now, I'm not alleging anything here. But the allegations of a pedophilia, child pedophilia ring, being
Holly's been following more than I have. I was aware of that for, you know, some time back in the very wealthy circuits of the planet. The Arabs, especially the Saudis, been involved in it, and our politicians, of course. And this is probably one of the reasons that the Obama left-wing machine had control over so many members of the House and the Senate. They were even Republican because they could blackmail them.
Right.
You know, that is gross. That is just so gross.
It's sad. I mean, it's ugly. It's the worst of the worst. I got so many emails. We did a couple minutes, or I did a 30-minute segment on it yesterday. Just kind of an overview. And it's really ugly. It is, you're right, it's gross. But you know something, Stan, when I was researching this, and it's unfortunate, this is worldwide. This is, and this is obviously crosses party lines. It's a real, well, it's horrible. I'll just leave it at that. But yeah, I was just curious as to whether you had any thoughts on it. But,
no, that I kind of skipped over because I'd been there and done that, and I thought, I don't want to revisit that. So
gotcha.
It wasn't
gotcha.
Pleasant. It doesn't solve the problem, but I just haven't got time to devote to that or all the other stuff. Listen, I wanted to you know, unfortunately, a lot of your listeners don't see the show images page. I don't know what percentage is, but you can click on the things and show those that see it on YouTube. Image 13, the top left of the show images page. I want to explain to people the nonsense that has been the face on Mars issue. I want to show them what Thank really you. Happened to form that face. So click on that image, and you will see okay. that it is a, you know, a series of like a part of a rise or a mountain sitting on a plateau that kind of sloughs off like, you know, the edge of a piece of coconut or something. You see where the red arrow is down to the normal flat part of the plain, the red dirt of Cydonia area. The yellow arrow points to this very sharp edge up above that, and the green arrow points to the raised mound portion. Now, you know, people, you know, that didn't know better were saying, oh, well, it's a man-made face object, that kind of stuff. Go to image 14, and you'll see the image of an inside of a crystallized stone from a volcano. It's called a geode. And where the yellow arrows are pointing inside of it, showing where the crystals form like little mountains inside the geode as it cools. Right. Planets and moons do the same thing. When they cool, they crystallize inside. Even the Earth now has inverse mountains pointing toward the magma core of our planet. When our planet eventually does cool, it too will have a hollow center, and there will be little crystallized mountains pointing in toward the center of the planet. Now, if you break a moon apart like that, or a planet, what happens is, it's like a piece of coconut on the right of the picture there. The green arrows show where the inside of the geode would be, but it's like inside of a piece of broken coconut. The blue arrows show the black or the brown skin of the coconut, and compare that to the outside of the geode, which would be the surface of the Earth or a moon. Now, when you look at that, the coconut piece, if it were a very flimsy shell of a moon, when it collided into the surface of Mars, it would break and these pieces would fall down. And then, if you go to the next image, 15, the face on Mars thing, it's a big image, so give it time to load. I've pointed a finger, or a little yellow arrow actually, at the face on Mars from this huge high-resolution photo over the Cydonia Planitia area there. That yellow arrow is pointing at the face on Mars as a chunk of the inside of a moon that collided there, and you can see it on the pictures of Mars all the time. It's a kind of black triangle that goes small at the right, bigger at the left. It's a fan, a black fan, where it collided and threw all the pieces of the surface of this moon, which I've calculated to be about 600 miles in diameter. And it left all these chunks in the Cydonia region, and if you look at the little blue lines, it's not all of the chunks I'm talking about, but it's some that are very representative. You look at these blue lines, and you'll see they have the crystal or mountain part on the top, and then they have that sharp ridge, and then they have the part that's into the dust there, where the outside of whatever that moon was is settled into the dust underneath it. You look at that in your own time and see what I'm talking about. That's the mystery of why it looks that way. There are so many other pieces around it that have similar looks, but not without a face. They are the inside of a cooled moon that hit Mars, broke apart through, you know, dust and stuff everywhere, probably why we have so much red dust on the top and more gray and green stuff underneath in the various areas they've been exploring, with the Mars landers. The Curiosity being the latest one, of course, finding some really incredible stuff there, and this is why. Anyway.
All right. So what you're saying, the face on Mars, not man-made or alien-made, it's a natural occurrence based on, what you explained. And that coconut next to the geode, I get that now. I'm looking at that. And, yeah, I can see that. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, study. It would be a test next week on this.
All right.
Yeah. Hey, a bit of fun. Image 10, if you go onto that and click onto it, it'll take you to a video and an explanation of it of how the astronauts on the space station are going to spend their Thanksgiving. You'll see that they're going to all, you know, there's, I think, five or six of them. six or seven maybe, some Russians, some Americans, and French, whatever. And they're going to celebrate Thanksgiving, the American astronaut up there who's giving the dissertation on what they're going to eat, arranged all the food packets so that they could have Thanksgiving dinner American style on the space station. And he goes through, you know, this is turkey and this is berry and all the stuff, sweet potatoes. And it's not going to probably be the same as you and I would have texture-wise. It's kind of a packet you squeeze. But anyway, right. They're going to have that. And on the ground, they're going to be piping up a number of football games so they can all sit around after a day's work on Thanksgiving in the evening and take time off to have Thanksgiving dinner together with all the other nations represented there on the space station. And he's doing this while he's floating in the space station. It's just a neat video, so have a look at it and have a thought about, friends and family that you might meet with, new friends perhaps, over Thanksgiving dinner, and take the opportunity to get to know them and be friends with them.
Wow.
Anyway.
That's amazing. Thank you for that, too. That is kind of fun.
Now, Australia TV, I know we're pressing the edge here. Australian TV has a news program kind of like Dateline's called Late Line. And they had a documentary, which I put links to here in images 11 and 12 down in the type if you press on that. It'll take you to the video images and interviews with people that are like they're wanting to go to Mars, you know, heads of corporations that are trying to get to Mars in the next 8 years, next 10 years, next 30 years. And it's telling why they think at the news line there, Late Line, that this is a bit too optimistic. However, Elon Musk, it seems to be walking on water as far as technology of late, and he thinks he can have people there in 8 years. So it'd be interesting just to see that documentary. And you'll have to click the type underneath. It's the same link on both 11 and 12, and it takes you to that documentary. So you can see the pros and cons of all the companies. Yeah, Mars One is another one, and SpaceX is the other one. There'll probably be more before it's through. Bigelow Space is wanting to put his hotels up in space and on Mars. I think we can get there with the addition of a new electrogravitic anti-gravity type platform. I have by email contacted SpaceX on anti-gravity and some other ways to that might be of value to getting a colony on Mars a little bit quicker.
Wow.
It's really interesting. So that's my my Thanksgiving blurb.
That's pretty neat. So so the anti-gravity stuff you're working on, you just shared with the Elon Musk crowd,
basically? I made the offer. I don't know whether they will buy it or not, or whether they will accept it or not. But they don't know where I've been, what I've done. So I wouldn't blame them if they don't. But I thought Elon Musk, to me, some of his fellow South Africans contacted me last year about developing a device to put on their rockets to make faster, more efficient rockets to get to the space station to refuel and restock it. And that's how I kind of got into the knowledge of the political structure of SpaceX and Tesla Motors. It's Elon Musk doesn't get to do everything he wants. There's a board of directors to answer to it. So it's kind of one of those things. If the board doesn't like it, well, it won't happen.
Stan, thank you for spending your time with us tonight. And if we don't talk to you before, you and Holly have just a tremendously wonderful Thanksgiving, and of course, the little ones as well.
Thank you. We have got the turkey thawing at the moment, and she's getting all the stuff ready for my mom's salad and stuff. So.
Oh, that's great.
You too, guys.
Yes, spend some time. I just hope you have some downtime, some restful time. And I'll tell you this, two of the most precious people we are thankful for are you and Holly. And I just want to say
that.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
For being part of us. All right. God bless you. Thank you.
God bless you. Next week, Lord willing.
Yeah, absolutely. Folks, Stan Dale from standale.com. Stan and Holly Dale, the amazing couple. Holly is just so precious. And, Stan is really an icon, a legend, isn't he? I mean, he's just the best. I wish him a happy Thanksgiving. Send him an email. Stan and Holly. Seriously. They read them. They appreciate that. And the same with all of our guests, and the same with all of our, you know, reach out and be, we should be so thankful for what we have. We are so fortunate, aren't we? Man, I think so. I just want to say thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us tonight, and have an absolutely smashing program for you tomorrow and throughout the week, and let you know about Thanksgiving. Working on something here. Until tomorrow, stay safe, God bless, and saddle for battle. Prepare and pray. God bless.